Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sandpits Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi everybody, welcome to yet another, that's right, five episodes of Serious Issues. Is it five? I think it's five. Whatever. This is the fifth episode of the relaunch of Serious Issues. My name is Andrew Levins, and joining me on these episodes, because we're recording two, that's the little bit of, getting to see how the sausage is made. We record two at once.
The chicken's cooked.
we got Jackson Bailey.
Yeah, that's right.
And we got Joel Dusha too.
Yeah, you're goddamn right, I'm here too.
You might be familiar with these guys from previous episodes of this podcast and their own podcasts, Plumbing the Death Star, Baseless Speculation, and Thumb Cramps, and other podcasts that they host on the Sans Pants Radio
Network.
Those
are the big three. I guess those are the important ones. Jackson. But yeah, I'm not in that, so who cares?
That's the Marvel Image, Dark Horse, and DC of Sans Pants Radio. The big four.
Yeah. The big four.
Speaking of baseless speculation, if you like comic books and want to hear three idiots talking about comic books and comic book movies, your latest episode of Baseless Speculation is all about the latest trailer for Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah. It's good.
So go check that out. I'm sure it's got lots of...
It's a stroppy app.
Really intelligent takes.
To be honest, this is one of the most comic book heavy ones we've done, which have resulted in mixed feedback from the audience. Some saying that we just latched onto the idea that we knew the title of a comic book and one event that happened in it. Others saying, yeah, this is a trend that Marvel are doing. Well done, baseless speculation.
So, divided.
Yeah. Everyone listening right now, go give a 3-star review to Baseless Speculation on iTunes.
Yeah, that's about right. That's probably what it deserves.
No one ever, a middling review is pretty good.
Yeah, I'd rather a middling review than a bad one. So if you're going to review us at all, you know.
Well, I mean, the only ones I read out are the bad ones.
Yeah. I think I would find a 3-star review the funniest.
Yeah.
Because, you've had a 3-star time. Why waste your time reviewing it?
Yeah, true.
3-star reviews for all our podcasts, please. This is Serious Issues. We've got three comics to talk about today. We're going to be discussing a new one from DC. I'll be reviewing Superman and the Authority by Grant Morrison and Michael Janin. Dusha is taking on an old classic, Ex Machina Volume 1, which I think is currently being published by DC as well. So a double DC lineup. Mm-hmm. And, I mean... I don't know who's publishing this final one, but...
It's DC as well. DC. It's DC as well, love. It's a triple DC lineup.
DC
Oh,
three.
My God.
We got a comic book adaptation of the video game Borderlands.
No. You could not be more incorrect. It is a comic book adaptation of a 1909 novel by William Hope Hodgson. House on the Borderlands. So.
Oh, you just wrote... when you said what you're going to be talking about, you said...
I'm sure I said House
on
the Borderlands.
Okay. That's look, right. I do what I do. I'm going to blame you, and that's entirely my fault. I didn't read the entire message. Oh, that's going to be much more interesting discussion then, because I was going to have to be like, these games don't appeal to me at all. I wonder if the comic book will.
maybe some other comic book will be better when...
The idea of Jackson... Actually, Jackson, can you try and find a comic book adaptation of Tales of the Borderland and let us know if it's good?
Oh, no. Legitimately, I have reviewed an issue, because I used to review the every single number one issue of comics that came out every week, and I'm certain that one of them was a Borderlands comic.
Yeah,
surely.
Jackson,
like,
give
don't
it a
know
read.
Why I read this.
I will, and it'll be like, surely, like, Borderlands is already bad, right? So surely it could only be worse if it was in comic book form. Surely there's no way they could improve on
it. I mean, unless they put Deadpool in it.
Well, yeah, well, dude, of course. And a chimichanga? You kidding me?
Is that I don't know if that's the one chimichanga. Like, chimichangas isn't plural of chimichanga, is it?
Isn't it? Give me them chimichanga. No, it'd be chimichangas.
Yeah.
Surely. Yeah. Give me them chimichangas is also, I don't think, quite like grammatically correct, but that's fine.
We've hit the Deadpool quota for today's episode, so let's keep rolling before
okay, hey, man, whose podcast is this? Let's talk about Superman and the Authority, number one and two. This is recently published by DC, and I think it ties into Infinite Frontier, which is the name of their current current big event. I looked it up, and yeah, apparently it's another relaunch of their entire line of ongoing monthly superhero comic book titles. It's the follow-up to the 2016 DC Rebirth relaunch. Now, back then, that was in the heyday of serious issues where I was reading absolutely everything. And I read every single first issue from that relaunch. And it was a dark time for me. But...
I can imagine. That can't have been good.
So
the last coherent DC event that I... Because there was a period of time where I was reading every Justice League, certainly, comic that came out. And they often were centered around, like, those events. The last coherent event I read, right? And I read all of the, like, DC Year of the Villain shit that came out.
Brutal.
And none of it made any sense. It was awful. But the arc before that was... Four evil trees from the beginning of time grow across space, and each the Justice League separates into four teams.
This is the name of the event, is it?
Who knows what it was called?
Infinite
but it was
trees.
Like, they needed to solve each tree was a puzzle, and they needed to solve one tree with wonder. And so it was Wonder Woman and a bunch of people, one tree with Justice, one tree with Batman,
right,
and one tree with Hawkman. It was so, like...
Sounds like Skyrim.
Bottom of the... It was insane. It was and it was coherent before any of the other shit that came after it. At least that one, it was stupid, but it made sense. And then... All of a sudden, Lex Luthor's got a magic doorknob and has figured out that chaos controls the universe or some... Oh, my... And that was the one that ended with the worst thing I've ever read in comics, or top five, where the bad guy, who is Eternia, I think, who is like... Who's... I don't know. They don't even really... She's just some powerful lady, right? Yep. Cosmically,
she's
whatever.
Purple, right?
And she... Yeah. And she's fighting someone else. Who cares? But they lose, right? Like, the Justice League lose. The world's ending, and it's just some fella, I don't know, and he's there to... Some immortal guy, and he's there to watch the end of the world, and it's like, it's over. Like, the DC universe is dead. But then this random weirdo alien turns up, and he's like, ah, my job is... I'm basically the Watcher, but let's not call me the Watcher, but I basically do the same thing, and I'm here to watch everything, and I've just got to write down that the world's ending. And the immortal character's like... But can't you do anything? Aren't you all powerful? And he's like, yeah, I am, but I'm just here to watch the end of the world. And then he's like, but look how good comic books are, basically. And he's like, he teaches this cosmic being how good superheroes are. He's like, look at the highs and lows, their powers, their stories. Aren't they great? And then the cosmic character's like, well, gee whiz. And he saves the day. It was... Like, way to suck yourself off, DC Comics.
I hope this is someone's introduction to comic books. Like, oh, check out this episode of All New, All Different Serious Issues. See if comics are for me. And then 10 minutes in, they've got that. They're like, nope.
No, they're not.
No, that sounds bad.
They're not. They never have been. They never will be. Next.
Anyway, thank you for allowing
me
that.
It's fun to revisit events. I do have some fondness for a few DC events. I loved Final Crisis, which was written by Grant Morrison, who also wrote this this book that I'm about to talk about in a moment. Mm-hmm. I even like Infinite Crisis, which is the Geoff Johns event where Superman Prime punches reality.
Yeah. It always pleases me that how many crises, well, to be honest, I can only think of two.
Crises.
But are, like, crises. Thank you. Like, kick off because a superhero does their power so much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
Flash goes
well.
So quick. He's so quick. Superman's so strong. It's such a punch that the world ends. It's great.
I guess, like, when they did New 52, which I think is 12 years ago at this point, maybe a 10.
Yeah.
Jesus.
2011, I think it was. I could have that wrong. So don't give me a 2-star review over this. All right, 3 only. when they did that, they kind of took away the fact that there was like an omniverse or a multiverse. There's just the one DC, and then they were like, oh, actually, then there's Earth 2, I guess. And then with Rebirth, it was like, oh, maybe there's more. And now this current thing, this seems to be, yeah, the DC multiverse has expanded into a larger omniverse where everything is canon, and it will still deal with the repercussions of DC Rebirth. There was so much of if I don't know if you guys read that DC Rebirth issue, but that was the one where basically it was like the Watchmen characters are part of DC now. Imagine all the insane shenanigans that are going to happen now. And then Geoff Johns took like 4 years to write his comic books. That was like, I think that was that you got three Jokers suggested in that. That was like the first mention of that in DC Rebirth, the first, and then also the Watchmen stuff. The button, of course, the button. No, what was the payoff for either of those? I don't even...
Did you read Three Jokers?
No.
Don't.
Are there still three?
You don't need to. No. There's three Jokers. They're like Goofy Joker, Crime Joker, and Psychopath Joker. And...
Fuck, marry, kill. I think, go.
Yeah, fuck Psychopath Joker, because I like to live dangerously.
Marry Goofy.
You like to get a cut mouth during sex.
Yeah. Marry Goofy Joker, because then I can live my dream of marrying Goofy the dog, or something close to it. And I guess kill Crime Joker so that I can become the new crime clown prince of Gotham.
Perfect.
Yeah.
The correct answer.
But no, it's real bad. It's a real bad comic.
And then also, isn't the reveal that maybe there's only one Joker in the end?
There is only one Joker. The other two Jokers were made by this Joker.
Yeah.
As a goof. And Red Hood kills one of them, and Batman has a cry about it. It sucks.
Yeah.
So Red Hood is leading the Suicide Squad now, I think, in the comics.
So.
Cool. The other payoff, the Watchmen stuff, was, the button comes up in Flash and... a Batman crossover where Reverse Flash beats the shit out of Batman. And I think that issue is really good, but it's not really a payoff. And that also leads into Doomsday Clock, which doesn't really tie in.
Yeah, well, that was like an alternate timeline, right? Like,
It's a sequel to Watchmen, but it takes place in a different universe, but Superman and Dr. Manhattan have caused a crossover of the universes. I have it, but I'd never finished reading it because I was like, I want to read it all when it all comes out. But unfortunately, issue 12 dropped at the same time that the Watchmen TV series ended, and it was way better.
Yeah, I read the whole thing. I don't remember what happened.
I know that Superman maybe has a kid.
That's normal. Because, okay, let's get into... I mean, I can't imagine if you're an actual DC fan right now who's just like, who just accepts all of this as like, yeah, obviously, you must be just like, fucking shut up.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Let's move on.
Go back to talking... I can't believe I'd ever say this, but go back to talking about horror manga. As part of this new status quo, so Jonathan Kent is Clark Kent's son. I don't want to get too into the convoluted story of how he exists, but ever since DC Rebirth, Superman has had a son. He was Superboy for a while, best friends with Damian Wayne. He is now Superman. But there are two Supermen in the current state of this DC universe, and one of them is Hot Dad Superman, and he doesn't have an S on his chest anymore. It kind of looks like a squeeze of toothpaste, like just a line, a curved, almost like a Nike swoosh. On his chest now. And so this book, Superman and the Authority, which itself. Do you guys remember the Authority?
No.
Ever so slightly.
So there was a Superman book many years ago called Superman. What's so funny about truth, justice, and the American way?
Oh, that title sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
From 2001, It was written by Joe Kelly and art by Doug Mankey and Lee Bermejo. And in this one, which is almost like a response to what was going on over at Wildstorm Comics at the time, where Warren Ellis and Mark Miller were doing The Authority.
Yep.
So basically, it was Superman having to fight a version of the Authority, but it was called The Elite. Oh my God, sorry, I've confused these two things. So The Elite is DC's reaction to this comic that Warren Ellis and Mark Miller wrote for Wildstorm called The Authority. And The Authority was a comic about superheroes taking political matters into their own hands. And doing things like, you know, that other superheroes weren't able to do so that they could, fix the world, basically. What's so funny about Truth, Justice, and the American Way was a one issue in which Superman fights the Elite. And the Elite are a play on the Authority. And what would Superman do if he ever met a bunch of characters like this? And it was led by a guy called Manchester Black, this like British guy that's a little bit like John Constantine, Hellblazer. Yep. Anyway, they end up spinning a comic out of that called The Elite, and Manchester Black has become like a thorn in Superman's side in various comics, even Rebirth recently. He kidnaps John Kent for a while and tries to cuts off Lois Lane's leg or some shit.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But many years ago, DC bought Wildstorm because Wildstorm Comics was the imprint started by Jim Lee, who is now like one of the higher up, CEOs of DC Comics. And to get to that position, they bought Wildstorm. And that means that they bought many comics that were like, that would only exist because they were like, not quite making fun of DC, but they were doing things that DC were afraid to, basically.
Yep.
And they own all these characters, the Authority. I guess the most famous members of the Authority are Midnighter and the Apollo, who are like the Batman and Superman analogies. And they have lots of great runs throughout history. Steve Orlando's Midnighter run, especially good. I highly recommend that. Jack, I reckon you'd love it. It's like gay Batman, gay Superman.
Hell yeah.
And so anyway, this Superman and the Authority combines the Elite and the Authority because Superman, he's a dad now and he looks hot. He's got a cute little dad beard. He spends a lot of this with his shirt off. He gets Manchester Black and he's like, "Oi, what the fuck do you want, Superman?" and essentially saves his life basically at the start of this comic, and he needs Manchester Black to fight on the side of the Angels because he thinks only Manchester Black has what it takes to save Superman in this current situation that he's in. But they need to form a new team, a new Authority, and so they recruit Steel. Who is a girl now? It's like I guess it's like the original Steel's daughter, In the second issue, every time we meet one of the new characters, we get like a bunch of stories with new art by different artists that kind of show them.
Oh, that's sick.
And these are all of these current DC comics are like prestige format, which means they're like extra long. They're quite nicely bound issues. Yeah. I recommend them. If you can try and pick them up, you should. So they recruit Steel, they recruit Midnighter and Apollo, and then the issue ends with them trying to recruit June Moon, aka Enchantress, who are fans of Suicide Squad, the comic, not the movie.
So
2016 Suicide Squad, Cara Deva,
the model.
I remembered her name.
The model.
She dances in it. It's cool.
It's awesome.
They're trying to recruit her. They have to go down to hell to save her soul or something like that. Grant Morrison is an absolute comic book legend, especially when it comes to DC. I loved their X-Men run. But many of my favorite DC books are Grant Morrison-helmed projects. Even stuff that they did for Vertigo. Some of my, favorite comics of all time. And, like, just seminal works, really. Like The Invisibles and the one about porn.
Hell yeah.
Have you guys read We Three?
I have read that.
Frank Quitely. Love that one. One of my favorites.
All-Star Superman, obviously, is a huge one.
More recently, Multiversity. Did you guys read that? Incredible.
No, I didn't read Multiversity.
But I keep meaning to.
That was like 9 issues, and it was Grant Morrison writing each issue. And he even does the only good comic book revised take on The Watchmen is him doing...
Oh, wow.
Is Grant doing their take on the Watchmen universe, but using characters from whatever universe it was that Alan Moore wanted to base the Watchmen in to begin with. You know, he wanted to use established characters, but wasn't allowed to, so he created the Watchmen characters instead. Grant Morrison does a multiversity issue where they use the original like characters from the Charleston comics run or whatever. So they've got like the Atom.
Yeah.
And then anyway, it's pretty cool. An amazing like nine issue series. And Superman and the Authority totally has that same energy as multiversity. It's like, I remember reading that being like, wow, this is like one of the only DC books bringing me joy at the moment. And if you are someone that has like a fondness for those characters and you have these like legendary runs and you're a fan of Grant Morrison, could not recommend more Superman and the Authority. It's a 3-issue limited series. It's been collected in trade later this year, I think in November. But you should be able to track down the first and second issue in comic books or digitally, and absolutely recommend it. The Michael Janin, who Dusha, you would know for doing the art for a lot of the Tom King Batman run. I think he did all the art in Batman Jokes, The War of Jokes and Riddles or whatever. he's doing incredible work here.
Yeah,
and
this
big
time has my attention. Even just like the fact that they, when they recruit characters, like the different artists jumping
in. Yeah, that's that alone.
And Grant Morrison, like they've written heaps of comics that I love. I remember reading All-Star Superman and being like, oh yeah, whatever, like this will probably be fine. But getting like an issue in and being like, holy shit, no, this is very good.
Yeah, no, Grant Morrison is maybe my favorite Superman writer. They just they have so many incredible ideas for a character that so many writers say, you know, breaks the superhero genre because, you know, they're too powerful or whatever. Grant Morrison just loves the lore of Superman and like the nature of him. This is a great read. It's actually it's four issues with art mostly by doing the main art Michael Janin, and the colors are by Jordi Belair. Do you guys want to know the artists on the other ones? Shall I look that up?
Yeah.
Let's get in there. Let's go to this little...
Let's dive deep.
Opening it up, checking it out. Superman and the Authority, number 2. Okay, so we have Evan Cagle, Fico Ossio, and Michael Janin.
Oh, cool.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, so the next issue is out next month, I guess. I would recommend this. If you have been scared of DC Comics for a while, fear not, friend. The one thing you have to accept, though, is that this version of Superman has been Superman for a long time, because the opening of Superman and the Authority number 1 has him dealing with John F. Kennedy. and then we see JFK like getting shot and Superman being bummed about that, which I thought was very funny.
That's great. He would be upset by that. That would really upset Superman. That makes a lot of sense.
Deeply, you know. Well, Superman probably could have done something about that. He's faster than a speeding bullet.
There's no more important speeding bullet than the one shot from the book deposit.
I absolutely love when they do. Yeah, this character's been around for real life events that you grew up with too. And then you're like, well, why didn't they do anything to stop it?
Well, I guess I honestly think the weirdest example of this in recent times, just before we move on to the comic I'm talking about, which also does exactly what you were just describing, but I think...
Superman watches JFK die?
No. As in comic books tied into real life events.
Yep.
But I think the weirdest example recently has been the opening credits of the Black Widow film, where... It's just like real, real strange, because they also feel like they're making big political statements at the same time.
Yeah,
because they're putting like Bill Clinton in a photo with like with the person who runs the Red Room.
It is. And then to get the movie that we get after that is kind of so funny.
With the lights out.
Oh man,
that's
dangerous. Yeah, it was funny watching the Far From Home trailer, is what it's called.
No Way Home trailer. And going same problem that Jackson does, which is that
just call Marvel them 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah,
come on, Marvel, Christ.
But it was great watching that and being like, oh yeah, I used to be really excited for these movies. This is great. Because like the fact that that came out during the same week as the Eternals trailer.
Yeah,
And I couldn't tell you a single thing that happens in that trailer. Whereas I can tell you all 3 minutes in, after only watching it once, I can tell you everything that happens in the Spidey one.
It's huge. Well, speaking of comic books that either tie into real life events or potentially have a take on real life events, I have been revisiting Ex Machina, which is a comic book written by Brian K. Vaughan. I've owned the entire series for quite a while. I started reading Why the Last Man, I reckon, close to 10 years ago, and powered through it. Barely stopped to do anything. Like, I think I've read the entire run in like a week, and loved it so much. So I immediately went out and bought Ex Machina. And also, like, Brian K. Vaughan has also written other stuff that I like really, really love and is critically acclaimed. Like, I'm not the first person to come onto a comic book podcast and be like, Brian K. Vaughan, great writer.
Yeah.
Like his stuff. So yeah, I love Saga as well. I haven't read much of Paper Girls, but what I've read, I really liked.
Really fun. I highly recommend The Private Eye. Yeah. The Private Eye, if you can track that trade down. Yep. One, a very underrated comic from the last five,
Pride
even
of Baghdad,
10 years.
It'll fuck great. Your life up.
Runaways.
Yeah.
Brian K. Vaughan has done a lot of stuff. But for some reason, the first time I started reading Ex Machina, which again would have been at least 5 years ago at this point, I read the first volume and I don't know if I just wasn't vibing with it. I can't really remember what happened, but I just never finished reading the rest of the series. So with the release of the Why the Last Man series, like television series coming out soon, I was like, what better time to revisit Ex Machina? Just like, you know, read something that I haven't read rather than rereading a series. And yeah, just get hyped. And Ex Machina is like a really dense and pretty like debasing read. For anyone who isn't familiar with the plot, it's about a guy called Mitchell Hundred. Yeah. Honestly thought I was going to fuck up his name there, but yes, it is Mitchell
Hundred. How could you fuck up a name like Mitchell Hundred?
Yeah, Mitchell Hundred.
Well, because we've been talking about Watchmen briefly, I almost said Mitchell Minute, and I was like, wait, no. Oh, yeah. Mitchell Hundred, who is a civil engineer that in 1999, is brought out to Brooklyn Bridge to investigate a mysterious structure that is kind of in the water. Turns out to be a bomb. It explodes, and he gains... It physically scars his face, but it also gives him the ability to communicate with machines. So he can hold conversations with any machine. So obviously the abilities to that can be like literally having conversations with machines versus like telling something to turn off or turn on.
Oh, yeah.
And the huge hook with this is that when the comic starts, he's the mayor of New York. He's retired from being the Great Machine.
Happens at the beginning of this.
Yeah, and everyone kind of hates it. He's, like, loved and loathed, and the reason, which is revealed towards the end of the... I'm reading, like, the deluxe volume one, so it's, like, quite a thick read.
Yeah.
But I think it would be roughly around the end of either the... Yeah, around the end of the first issue, you find out that the reason that people are... iffy on him is that on September 11, 2001, the Great Machine stopped one plane from hitting the second tower, but was too slow to stop the first plane. So it's set in a world where 9/11 happened, but the planes hit the Pentagon and, just the first tower. So that's already quite heavy, but because he's a politician, he's also a piece of shit. So, the story throws you in, and it's, like, it's quite a dense comic in the sense of, like, it's, like, quite dialogue-heavy, and there's a lot of, again, because it's, like, a political-ish comic book.
It's very influenced by the West Wing.
Yeah.
Mm. Like no other comic I can think of.
Yeah, and because it's influenced by things like the West Wing, there's a lot of characters and a lot of staffers and a lot of different relationships, so... It definitely takes a bit to get into. And then on top of that, it jumps around dates quite a lot because it is being like, okay, this happened into the year 2000 leading up to the big event. And like, it also reveals his childhood, but then also reveals like why he's making certain decisions. And yeah, it's really, really good. And it's kind of falls into the same category as, I guess, things like I mean, we've got it so much, but like, what if superheroes were real life? Oh, that'd actually be morally gray.
Which probably wouldn't be super cool.
No one's actually perfectly good, so yeah, it would be pretty fucked. I've actually thought about it, fuck.
If Superman was real, he'd kill people, I reckon. He'd go crazy, bro.
Yeah, but it's not like, one thing I like about this, and Levins, I know you're in the same situation as me with this, is like, I cannot stand The Boys. Shut up. I've seen so many things where Superman is bad. I got no time for it. I'm not going to watch the TV series.
Apparently the TV series is really good. I didn't like the first episode, but I hate Red. Back when I allowed myself to do such a thing, I hate read all of The Boys comic book by Garth Ennis. I am a pretty, like, there's some Garth Ennis runs that are just some of my favorite things ever, particularly his Hellblazer run, I think is just like one of my favorite things I've ever read. There's even like a spin-off of that, which is just set in Ireland where he's from, that I love. But The Boys and a lot of his like kind of like edgier, like, hey, superheroes are actually fucking dumb. Like, I just find so boring. And yet I read all of it.
Why can't people envision a good person? Why do people think that's an impossible thing?
Well, that's why, I mean, I really need to read Invincible. But the reason why I'm open to that is that, like, people in that are good people. It's just that one guy is a bad guy.
Is he a bad guy for the entire series, though? Who could say? I've read it all. He isn't, so you don't worry about it. you'll forgive him.
But the, like, Omni-Man in that, for instance, like, the mystery is there. It's not just like, the superheroes that the world loves, they're all cunts.
It kind of,
I don't know, my brain puts that in the same category as Deadpool, and I don't know why, but...
No, I get it. It's because it's like a not very clever statement wrapped up in like 100 layers of not even irony, like I don't like you know what I mean, like it's masquerading as a clever new take.
Grant Morrison, Garth Ennis did it first with Hitman, and that was in like the 90s, right? And but then he just kind of kept doing it with other comics, like actually superheroes are dumb and fucking shit house. It's like, I know, we already read you say that in a bunch of other comics, why are you still doing this?
And but, it's the same, like Watchmen was mid 80s and kind of like, again, it does that as well, but at least
but then, like, you know, he's been fucked over by most of the big companies, I'm sure, and had bad experiences with all of them, so it's not just him saying superheroes are dumb, it's him saying Marvel's dumb, DC's dumb, you know. So there's minutia that I guess, like,
there can be nuance to it as a take,
which but Ex Machina has been quite a good read. It's actually like not taking more out of me than reading a comic, because that feels like it's a negative thing, but I feel like it's far more involved than like a normal comic would be. Like, for instance, Saga, there's a million characters, a million locations. It's like, it's one of those comics that's set in space where space actually feels big. But I could read, like, just breeze through those comics and, like, follow it fine. Where Ex Machina, I feel like I actually need to be, like, focused
paying
just
attention,
on it.
Yeah.
We're not paying attention. Obviously, I have to pay attention to read, but...
But some you have to pay less of some comics you don't have to pay as much attention. I think that's a fair thing to say.
You know. I remember, like, when Saga first started coming out, there were those great questionnaires that Brian K. Vaughan would do with the readers at the end of each issue, every few issues. And the first one was like, what's something that's dated really badly? And a whole bunch of people wrote Ex Machina. But he published it too, and it was funny. But yeah, I mean, Ex Machina came out in 2004. I think I think reading it now, knowing that, it's actually a way easier read than it would have been if you read it, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, or even like, you know, I think towards the end of its publication date. I think it does exist in that. You know, when you do politically influenced stuff, it can date itself negatively or positively, just depending on what the cultural climate is at the time.
It's
for sure.
I mean, it's almost going to probably fall into the same category as Hamilton, where Hamilton, when it's a celebration of America, when things are going well, good. But the moment that America's not going well, Hamilton looks tone deaf and fucked.
Yeah,
and for look. Sure. My personal opinion is that Hamilton sucks, but that's not a comic book, so let's not talk about it.
I mean, surely Ex Machina, it's a comic book by now.
Oh, surely there's a Hamilton comic book. There'll be a Hamilton webcomic, that I can guarantee.
Hamilton hentai, about, please.
I was going to say, what about a Hamilton manga?
Yeah.
Sure. Actually, that surely exists.
We actually want to be worked on. Here's a cool sneak peek for one of my other podcasts. Hey fam, we've made a t-shirt that says Neon Genesis Hamilton.
That rules.
And so it's like the episode font from Evangelion.
Yeah,
and then it says like episode one. I am not throwing away my shot. Just the worst shit. $40.
So Ex Machina, going in to read it now, it does kind of come across like it's nowhere near as politically nuanced than something that would be about this written now would read. Just because like there's a lot of like all politicians are the same, like Democrats, conservatives, whatever.
The world in 2004 was very different to the world today.
Yeah.
I think we had within the last like 5 years, we've been like, oh, actually, maybe when South Park was like every election is between a turd sandwich and a giant douche, that was actually a really damaging mentality for the country. And maybe they should never have said that. And maybe actually we can want a good politician and that's okay to, you know what I mean? I think that there's like that kind of like irony poisoned. Not even irony. I don't know. Like that kind of mid-2000s South Park mentality of like, oh, both sides are bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
If only people stopped giving a shit, maybe the world would be better. But actually, that's like a pretty fucked up opinion because
well,
there are things that are objectively good for people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it floats around a lot. Like the 90s slacker movement kind of had that as well.
Yeah.
Which was like, caring about anything sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it back.
Yeah. Oh, no. I just like to retract my statement. What I said actually rules, and that's how everyone should live. You care about a thing, you fucking loser.
That's
you
lame,
suck
dude.
Shit.
Just can I interrupt this review to tell you guys what the Hamilton porn parody is called?
Yes, please.
Hamilton?
Hamilto. It exists.
That's clever. That's clever.
Cleverer than mine.
If we weren't recording right now, I would watch at least a snippet of it just to let you know if it was a musical or not.
Well, I reckon in between, we've already revealed that this is one of two episodes we're recording today. So maybe stick around for next week's episode where Levens will reveal if the Hamilton porn parody is a musical or not. But back to Ex Machina just real quick. I really, really like it, but it is like, it has horrible negative vibes. And if you're not in like, and I could imagine this being a really rough read depending on your current situation. Because there's a lot of just, like, cynicism attached to literally everything. And I know that, like, in the current climate in the world, there's a lot of people out there that do not need that.
For sure.
It's not, like, too edgy or anything like that. It's just, like, yeah, like, some of the statements and stuff people in 2021 are not going to agree with. And that's fine.
It's like 50% superhero, 50% political, and so the political stuff can be very like harsh. He becomes a lot more morally likable from memory. Or I could be wrong. If he does something disgusting soon, please don't think that I agree with what he did.
A lot of the stuff that he makes a very good point. Like the series has established that he's running as an independent, and like it establishes pretty early on that he has some like he leans more Democrat in most areas, but he does have some conservative beliefs, which also ties into some of the political conflicts he has, which is like, if you do this, you're isolating this part of your audience. And that's where like the cynicism kind of comes into it. Cause there's like a gay marriage story.
That's right.
In the first series. And like, he is fine in it, but all of the conversation around it in the book won't be a great read depending on your circumstances.
Because
like there's no reveal where he's like, I'm just doing this for the votes. Pretty much just to tie it in, he promised that he would do anything he could as a mayor of New York to help anyone that was a first responder in 9/11. And that means he often is the celebrant of weddings, and then there's a gay wedding and everyone's like, don't do it. And he's like, I'm gonna do it because like, why wouldn't I? There's lots of side conversations about it in the series. Again, in 2004, would have been a lot easier to swallow than in 2021.
And that's what happens like, when you read and take in old shit. It's just part of it. It's part of the
Yeah, exactly. And like I'm for sure. Like I am someone that goes back and watches old films and old like it consumes older media all the time. And I know that you kind of things were fucked, and as time moves on, we're getting slightly less fucked, or at least it's an easier to understand why you wouldn't do something like that now.
But yes, sometimes Mickey Mouse will come across a big patch of tar on the ground, and we'll cover his whole body on it, and that will get him into a different club that he wouldn't be able to with different colored skin.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just what people were like back then.
Yeah.
It was fucked up.
That's what people had to do, yeah. That's just how it was.
Yeah, like, I really, really strongly recommend it. But, yeah, it's nowhere near as easy to read as any of Brian K. Vaughan's other stuff. Like, even Why the this came out after, or started after Why the Last Man. But I think that if you go back and you read Why the Last Man, that would probably be much easier to swallow.
Much more digestible, yeah, for sure.
Although,
yeah,
that's
a very, like, grippingly written comic book with, like, you know, I mean, Saga is probably his best example of, like, you know, the final page being, like, a crazy cliffhanger. And Why the Last Man absolutely has that, too. I feel like Ex Machina doesn't as much.
No, Ex Machina, like, I could not tell you. Yeah, because, like, the way that the... And to be honest, I'm not entirely sure how it's published currently because I've got a Vertigo imprint, which doesn't exist anymore. So if they are publishing it again, it'll probably just be under DC, right?
Yeah, they have republished it so many times, yeah.
Yeah, where what I have doesn't have the start and end of issues. It just has them divided into arcs. But the arcs also aren't like I'm not an idiot. This is like collects issue 1 to 11, but it's not like one arc is three issues or whatever. It just seems to be some are like four, some are two. But yeah, like reading it, I could not tell you where an issue starts and an issue ends. Which is,
you know, for sure.
It's weird. Like, it's pretty strange to read a trade that is structured like that. Usually it's really obvious where a comic ends.
Yeah, I have trades where, like, it will end and then you'll see the front cover for the next issue and then you start the next issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
It makes
it
easier to know when to take a break.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to take a breather, for sure. Well...
Yeah, anyway, Ex Machina, good. Jackson, what have you been reading?
Wait, before you do that, you didn't even say who the artist was of that terrible review.
Oh, Tony Harris.
Three stars.
I apologize.
Tony Harris. And,
so book one is illustrated solely by Tony Harris, but I believe as the series goes on, they get more guest artists in.
Cool. Great review. Three stars.
I'm not reviewing a comic book adaptation of the book.
Well, before you don't review it, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Yeah. Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, thanks, sponsors.
Okay. Time to not review it. You're here to hear the lack of something. So, no, so this is a comic book published by DC. And it's an adaptation of a 1908 horror classic called The House in the Borderlands by an author named William Hope Hodgson. And it's kind of considered, I think, one of the first sort of cosmic horror stories. It's like a kind of got that Lovecraft vibe, but, you know, it's sort of like, because it's more just like a cosmic horror story, it's not a Lovecraft story, then it doesn't necessarily fall into the... I think when people say, like, oh, it's a cosmic horror story, largely these days, like, they mean Cthulhu's in it, or there's, like, a big monster at some point, whereas... And I think that, like, Lovecraft's got, like, a lot... Lovecraft, aside from being a horrifically racist man, he wrote some good books, but he also wrote some terrible stories, like his story about a house that hates Polish people. So
I just started a YouTube channel with my kids. Hey, you should follow me, youtube.com/Levins. One of the things that I'm going to do is review board games with my son Archie, who is 7. And we were reviewing a game that he loves called Cthulhu in the House. And I had to edit myself out talking about how racist Lovecraft was. And I'm like, wait a minute. the average audience of this kid. I'll get him young, I guess.
It is crazy because, like, you read sometimes where people are like, look, Lovecraft was a product of his time. He was notably racist for his time. There are letters that he received from other racists being like, tone it down, dude. You're too racist. So he is not a product of his time. He was a terrible little man. And not all of his comics are great. And it's kind of a shame, I think, sometimes that the cosmic horror genre has been completely relegated to being Lovecraft's alone, which is not the case. So the art for this is done by Richard Corbin, who I think I've spoken about before on this show.
Legendary fella.
The legend. It's incredible. Richard Corbin's art is so disgusting and lumpy and shiny, but I have so much time for it. And I think it's like, it is the perfect style for a story like this. And it's written by Simon Revelstroke, who I've not read anything else by him, but apparently I was reading... He completely redid the ending to the novel for the comic,
right.
And you can tell because the ending is crazy and doesn't seem in line with the rest of the story.
Can we talk about Richard Corbin quickly, though?
Yeah.
So, I mean, have you got a favorite comic that comes to mind?
Rat King. I love Rat King so much.
He's done so many excellent...
Rat God.
So many excellent horror comics for Dark Horse. He did The Punisher, The End. Another, which is a Garth Ennis comic, which tied into his Punisher Max. He did the artwork for that, which is really good. Have you got a favorite thing that you've ever seen by Richard Corbin, Dusha?
Because I don't think I know who Richard Corbin
well,
is.
Well, guess what? Do you guys know what artwork Richard Corbin is most famous for? Do you know? Jackson?
No, what would
it's
that
not
be?
A comic book. It's an album cover. Richard Corbin did the album cover for Meat Loaf's Bat Out of Hell.
Oh, yeah, that's
of course
my favorite
he
work.
Did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Of course he did. Yeah, it's got all that lumpiness that Richard Corbin's so known for. It's
and
like
what Meatloaf is famous for.
That's true.
Do you know what happens on that cover, Dusha?
Yes.
It's
yes,
the motorbike
I know what happens
one.
On the cover of Bat Out of Hell.
I might review that next week. I'll review Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell, my favorite comic book.
I reckon do it.
The cosmic horror album.
Of Bat Out of Hell. Richard Corbin he released a comic I think semi-recently that was not good. It was very well. It was okay, but it was very, very disgusting. It was
how
like,
recently?
Because
he's
read.
Dead.
Or maybe he just did the art for it.
Damn, Richard Corbin died last year. Fuck. R.I.P.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Sorry, you had to find out from me being like he's dead.
Well, I mean, imagine listening to this. I mean, a bunch of people just discovered that now. Did you know he was dead, Jacko?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I had no idea. I
how did he die?
I thought I knew he was old.
Heart surgery, complications at the age of 80 years old. Rest in peace.
Damn, RIP, Richard Corbin.
Well, he made a comic about a castle that's alive and it's gross.
That sounds
it's
sick.
A real gross comic. Anyway, so House in the Borderlands is one of those like little nesting stories in that it's about two I think they've been updated. I forget what they are in the original story, but they've been updated to two like Yale boys or Oxford boys who are tramping around in Ireland, and they encounter some locals who take no guff with them and decide that they're going to kill them. And so the kids run into the kind of marshes around or the woodland, and they find this, like, a big canyon, basically, with the crumbling ruins of an old mansion on it, and they hide there for a bit, and they find a book, and the book is the account by a man named Byron Galt of him and his sister or wife, it's unclear, living together in this mansion as things get stranger and stranger for them, the titular house in the Borderlands. Pretty early on, out of the canyon, horrible pig men arrive and invade their home. But what I really love about it, he has a dream about a giant pig cloud that wants to eat him. But it does a great job of just going insane halfway through.
Yeah.
So I think what they're trying to, kind of use this, like, you're not really sure anymore what the time is, like what the era is. You're not sure if it's real. You're not sure if it's imagined. You sort of feel a little bit like you're going insane as you read the comic. And the sequence of events becomes kind of hard to determine as well, which I'm not sure. I've actually never read the original story, but I don't know if it's, I think the adaptation to a comic book really does a great job because of the sort of panel work and the illustration and these large kind of splash pages where he's having a dream about the cloud turning into a big pig, and then he's an old man, and then he's a young man again, and his dog dies, but then, like, you know, a couple of pages later, his dog has a horrible fungus growing on its leg, and it's well and truly alive, and you're like, I have lost my mind alongside the protagonist of this book. The whole thing has a real intense sexual menace to it.
Okay, which I think Richard Corbin is to,
great at doing.
Interrupt,
yeah,
and be like, this sounds super up my alley. Pretend I was going to say that before it has a bad sexual aura. Googled Richard Corbin. I mean, as you figured out from me announcing his death live on the podcast.
R.I.P.
It turns out I have actually read something that he illustrated, and that was The Punisher, The End. I don't know why I've read that, but
I just said that.
Yeah, you said that before.
I was too busy reading about it, not listening.
I think Richard Corbin just draws on a lot of places for where his horror comes from, and sometimes that comes from a sense of sexual menace. But it definitely is not at the forefront of the comic. It's just an element of it. I think you'd really like it, Dusha, because it is upsetting
very up my
to
alley.
Read.
Yeah, I mean,
it's gross and it's bad, but it's also really good.
The losing your mind and, like, watching something die and then having a horrible fungus or whatever, and then even the terrible, horrible sexual nature of it. This sounds just like the film The Lighthouse, which I loved. So
it's, yeah, and that, like, the kind of story accompanied with Richard Corbin's art, and toward the end, it's just a perfect marriage, I think. And toward the end, you're just like, I don't know what's happening anymore. Is it all in his head? But it's also definitely not one of those stories where you're like, oh, it's all in his head. In the end, he was just going insane. Something's going wrong. It's the ending, yeah, like I said, is a little bit left field, and I think doesn't really gel with the rest of the story. But, if you're looking for, like, a really solid, kind of pretty self-contained, pretty disgusting and upsetting horror novel, it's incredible. It's the kind of thing that I read probably, like, once or twice a year. Like, I'm often going back to it just because I like it so much. And also, hey, while we're talking Richard Corbin, and I will review it at some point as well, read Rat God. That's a fucked up comic. It's so gross, but it's so good. Which I guess is kind of like my review for any Richard Corbin written or illustrated piece.
He was criticized for making work that is too pornographic, and he says it's not sexual, it's sensual. Thoughts, Jackson?
Yeah. That's, for some of it, that's accurate. For others, you're like, Richard Corbin. He loves his sort of, like, plump, sort of rosy-cheeked buttocks and what have you. You know? There's a lot of that going on for old Richard Corbin. He loves a kind of a pert behind and some sort of, like, beautiful pendulous breasts. He's a fan. He's horny. He's a horny guy. Look, that over-sexualization can work for a horror comic, because I think, you know, that kind of horror and sex are a little bit intertwined. You see that in horror movies as well. Like, it's, you know, it's all heightened arousal or whatever. But yeah, for something like The Punisher, the end, I can imagine that might be a bit much.
Yeah, well,
but The Punisher's juicy butt.
Yeah,
juicy apple bottom, rosy cheeked and pert.
Yeah, well, it's extra intense because Punisher the End takes place after World War III.
Yeah, but I bet it's still in there.
Sexiest war of all.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jackson, look, I recommend it. It's great. Yeah,
you've won me over big time. I'm trying to track down a copy right now.
Yeah, if you can find it.
Yeah,
mid episode. Damn. Yeah, if you can find it, give it a read. It's really
well. Wow, you've really won this episode, Dusha. Two comics that you didn't have never heard of that you're now going to track
down
and read.
True.
Yeah,
and I'm going to read neither of yours.
Perfect.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
No, I might read Superman versus the Authority. That sounds all right.
So,
but
yeah, that was
Ex Machina is not for me.
Three completely different, published by DC Comics. Completely accidental that all three of them were bunched together. We got Superman and Authority at the top. What was your one to call it? Ex Machina Volume 1. And then House of the Borderlands. House on the Borderlands?
House on the Borderlands, I'm pretty sure.
House on the Borderlands.
The House on the Borderlands.
Excellent.
Yeah.
If you have forgotten their names, Jackson Bailey, Joel Dusha, my beautiful guests on this episode. If you want to catch them, you can. Catch them if you can on on other Sans Fans podcasts, including Plumbing the Death Star, Baseless Speculation, and Thumb Cramps. And they can all be found over at sanspants.com, sansfansradio.com even.
Sansfansradio.com.
And while you're there, you can check out my other podcasts, Hey Fam and All the Small Games. We are all weekly now. It's a lot of we're just making a lot of content, all of us.
Yeah. It's kicking off.
It's good. More podcasts.
Make
Let's
sure
do it.
If you don't listen to all of it, you won't understand any of it, truly. So get out there, catch up, and keep up to date. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want to come and join us to discuss this episode, the best place to do it is in the Sans Pants Radio Discord or over on Facebook in the Serious Issues group, which can be found at facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Now, let's
Bye.
All watch Hamilton.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.